The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time!
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah!
I finished these fights.
Give me a hell yeah!
Top Rope Nation.
Learn to love it! It's the best thing going today.
Welcome back to Top Rope Nation, episode 229. Justin Joint, welcome back to the Hawkeye State. We were out of town over the weekend. You and I went to Minneapolis, attended Full Gear, attended AEW Rampage. We got back into town Sunday afternoon. Didn't do the pod then. We were gassed from the weekend, but it's Monday night. We're ready to talk about our experience at Full Gear. Are you adapting back to the Iowa way of life, Justin Joint?
Back to reality. I'm not enjoying it. I much preferred my pro wrestling reality this past weekend.
Isn't that the truth? We were saying, like, as the weekend was winding down, back to reality tomorrow. Yep. After such an awesome weekend. Kyle, you were with us in spirit. You found us on TV in the crowd, so you feel like you were there virtually. We would have loved to have had you there with us like you were in Chicago at All Out, but good to talk to you, my friend. How are you doing?
We'll see about that in an hour or so, how I'm doing. I'm not going to lie. Your voice feeling a little gassed right now. Fatigued. So
we got to carry the Ross man for once?
Yeah, we'll see. You know, maybe it'll be like Greg the Hammer Valentine. I'll get real warmed up at the 15-minute mark. We'll see.
I like it.
But no, I'm really fired up to talk about it and kind of measure my perspective watching it, you know, via traditional means on pay-per-view versus you guys live and in person.
Yeah. And hey, like I said, we went to Rampage. We went to Full Gear. We sat unbelievable seats, straight on from the hard cam in the same section, in the same row, both nights, just a few seats apart. So if you had a keen eye while you were watching, you might have saw the Top Rope Nation shirts I was wearing. I was promoting the pod, got a lot of airtime, especially during Full Gear. You might have seen the logo on my blue shirt. And so we were repping the pod. We were up there with a good friend of the pod, Aaron Graham, and a Patreon supporter of the pod. He's always out representing for us. So we had a great time with Aaron. We went to a vintage toy store, went to some great bars, got a great burger. Justin Joint had been wanting to try this burger for many years. The Parlor Burger, Justin. Did it live up to the hype?
I thought it was amazing, and I knew that they had a concession at Target Center, so I did not eat supper the night of Full Gear expecting to get that burger, and I find it, and it is the only concession that is not open.
Could not believe that.
Yeah.
Could not believe that. I will say, though, it's been years since I've been to the Target Center, and the last time I was at the Target Center, I was not impressed. It was a very aging building. This is probably five, six years ago, but it's really, really nice now. They have redone it. It's on par with the Xcel Energy Center now across town in St. Paul, I would say. So great location for a show. The fans showed up in full force. You know, big fly-in crowd, of course, for a pay-per-view. But, I mean, that place was hot for both shows, but especially Full Gear, which had the bigger attendance. And we were staying right down the road, hotel in the area, so we had some run-ins with some wrestlers, as I think we'll talk about as we hit those matches as we go through. Yeah, I don't think we even told you about all of
that. No, I don't know nothing, man. I don't know what you guys did at all. It's all news to me.
Yeah. So these will be some real hot takes. Kyle will be hearing them for the very first time. Let's see. I guess before we get started, let me just, what I normally do, when we do these pay-per-view shows, we usually go live right after the fact or sometimes the next morning, but we grade the show A through F. And I think these grades are probably going to be unanimous, but Kyle Ross, if you had to grade AEW Full Gear, what grade are you giving it?
Oh, I'd probably go with an A. I don't think you can go any lower than an A-. In the Facebook group at the end of the show, end of the night. I compared it to All Out. I don't think Full Gear had the peaks of All Out. You know, when you talk about the Lucha Bros Young Bucks match, you talk about Adam Cole and Bryan Danielson debuting for the promotion. But top to bottom, it was probably a better wrestling card. I had seven matches rated 3 stars or better, 4 at 3.5 or better, and 2 at 4 or better. So that's pretty freaking solid.
Yeah.
I've already seen Meltzer's star ratings. He's got something insane going. That's just, come on, man. But
I heard him on his post show. I think he said every match but one was over 4 stars, right?
Yeah.
Did he give any five?
Any fives, Kyle, from Dave?
No, I just saw the thing that you repeated, that every match but one was 4 or something like that. Gotcha. I didn't listen. I don't know what the exact star ratings are per match.
Okay. Justin, your grade?
Kind of in the same boat with Kyle. I would say an A. I kind of want to give it an A plus, but you know, it can be taken as a positive if the card was so stacked that it was relentless. And for someone like me who likes to have a, you know, couple beers during the show, I had to stop it too, because there was just no time to go to the bathroom or no time you felt comfortable leaving your seat.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was very hard to find the time to do that. I would definitely give it an A myself. I kind of agree with what Kyle said. I think the peaks of All Out were better. I don't think there's any match on this card as good as Young Bucks and Lucha Bros, the cage match from All Out, but I do think the card was more consistent, you know, all the way down. So I would say, like, if you gave all the matches a score and did like an aggregate score or whatever, it would be the better show. But there was maybe, you know, in spite of Paige's title win, which was incredibly memorable, I think probably more memorable moments from All Out, you know, with the big debuts at the end.
Sure. And, you know, if there was any negative whatsoever about Full Gear, you know, there's a lot of chatter about this while the show was going on and in the days that have since passed. The length of the show, it did feel in the middle it was getting a little long. Did it feel that way in the building?
Yeah, the energy slagged a little bit during the tag team match and the women's match, probably because one didn't really matter, and I think the women's championship was a little on the predictable side.
Yeah, I would agree with that, too. I mean, it's hard when you've got a card stacked this much. I mean, we're going to talk probably, when we look at this show, we're going to look at it from a broad perspective, I think. We're not going to give you the match-by-match results as far as, like, breaking down every finishing move that led to every pin and stuff like that. We are going to talk about the match results, but we're not going to, you know, break them down that specifically. I want to look at the matches more from, like, a big picture perspective. Where are we going now coming out of this show? And just some general macro thoughts about each show. So, or about each match. So, yeah, go ahead, Kyle.
I was going to say, you know, there's a lot of chatter that the tag match with Cody maybe didn't need to be on there. The argument, I guess, would be simple. It wasn't even featured on the countdown special, right?
Yeah.
So by proxy, it felt, I guess, less important. I mean, they've been feuding for weeks, but I thought the bigger issue is there were multiple matches on the show that could have had 5 minutes shaved off.
Yeah, and that's like, you know, saying that that tag match maybe didn't need to be on there. That would have made for a good match for maybe people to go use the bathroom quick or go to the concessions. But like you said, it just didn't need to be as long as it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll hit on all these. Like I said, I'll give you the big picture perspective. But before we do, I do want to say, for everyone watching the live stream right now, wherever you're at, Facebook, streaming on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, follow us, hit subscribe, like the video. Even if you're watching on demand after the fact, it would help us out so much. Would greatly appreciate that. If you're listening to the podcast version of the show, please subscribe, whether you're on Apple, Spotify, Podbean, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. Better yet, if you're on Apple specifically, leave us a 5-star review. And if you leave us a written review, we will read it on air. And we've got 2 new reviews that have come in over the last couple of weeks that I wanted to get to, from 2 different continents, gentlemen. So let's look at these. Number one, this one's coming in from the United States. 5 stars.
Was hoping for Antarctica.
Great podcast, especially the retro wrestling episodes. Let me first say, I don't watch much current wrestling, but I love anything from the 80s and 90s. These guys do a great job recalling and discussing retro wrestling cards. I love the fantasy drafts as well as the best of specific pay-per-views in the past. If you love pro wrestling, give it a listen. And this was from Brave Vol. So thank you very much, sir. That one came in almost a month ago now. I didn't think I had read that one on the air because we've done like a lot of, you know, special episodes over the last couple of weeks. I wanted to make sure to get to that one. And the second review came in from Ireland. And this is from Bernie81. I was a little shocked this came in from a guy named Bernie because I thought it might be someone named Scott, as you will maybe understand here in a second. Simple Maths is the headline. Says, you know, they say that all podcasts are created equal, but you look at TRN and you look at the others and you can see that's not true. See, normally if you go one-on-one with another podcast, you got a 50-50 chance of winning. But TRN is a genetic freak and not normal. So you got a 25% chance at best at beating TRN. Then you add Patreon to the mix. Your chances of winning drastically go down. So now you've got a 66 2/3 chance of trying, but other podcasts know they can't beat TRN, so they won't even try. So now you have got a 33 2/3 chance minus the 25% extra that Patreon gives you. And now you can guarantee that TRN is 143 2/3% the best wrestling podcast. That spells disaster for other podcasts. Thank you, Bernie. You are the big Papa Pump of all podcasting reviewers.
Love breaker math. Love breaker math.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite reviews.
Good stuff. Yeah. So, hey, by the way, if you leave us a review, please leave us your Twitter or Instagram username so I can get a hold of you, get your address. Because if you leave us a written review, I send you a free sticker in the mail. So if either of you send me an email, topropenation@gmail.com, let me know that it was you who sent in that review. Give me your address so I can get that sticker out to you, because those are great. Really good stuff. And lastly, click that link here in the podcast or YouTube description to check out our Patreon page. It's patreon.com/topropenation. You've been hearing in recent weeks, I've been posting, you know, the teasers of our bonus shows that we do each and every week over there. You're going to hear one on the main feed again later this week, a 15-minute teaser of Top Rope Nation Extra coming at you later this week. TRN Extra is a bonus weekly show. We only do it for Patreon. It's the only way to hear it each and every week. Of course, we also have the monthly bonus show, Top Rope Nation Classics. We're going to be recording that one, I believe, next week for November on Survivor Series 1996. We've got close to 60 bonus podcasts in the Patreon archives. The only way you can hear those, new ones dropping every week, is to support us on Patreon. Thank you to all of our patrons for your continued support. And if you're out there and you're thinking about it, we would love for you to give us a chance. We think you'll enjoy what we're doing over there. Again, the link is here in the podcast description. So let's get to Full Gear and talk about some of the big matches. I don't think we really need to talk about the buy-in. I mean, it was the weakest match on the show, no doubt about it. We had Hikaru Shida and Thunder Rosa defeating Nyla Rose and Jamie Hayter. Not bad, but the weakest match on a loaded card, to be sure.
What'd you get? Yeah, there was Eddie Chance for Vicky. I had forgotten that this was the 15-year anniversary of Eddie's passing in Minneapolis, no less. Too.
Like two blocks from the arena.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, Jamie Hayter, is she going to be known for the way she takes bumps on the outside? Because this is two matches in a row where, like, when she eats the high cross body, it just looks spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But she's got to be sore in the morning.
She's really good with her crowd interactions, too, I would tell you, just from being there. You don't see that a lot on TV. But when, especially, like, when she was out there later for Britt Baker's match and she was on the outside, just the way, like, she would hear things people would say in the crowd, she'd be, like, the one to really go over and be yelling at people 3-4 rows deep on the ground level, which was kind of entertaining to watch. She does a great job with crowd interaction. So, wanted to call that out because you wouldn't normally notice that probably watching on television. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, the good chance for Vicky, of course, because of the anniversary. Eddie passed away 16 years ago to the day from the pay-per-view. In the same arena, in the same city, two blocks from the arena, it was the hotel that he sadly passed away. So We had multiple tributes to Eddie throughout the show, as we'll probably shout out some of them here. But, you know, everyone was paying their respects to one of the all-time greats, which was kind of nice to see. And then we open up the show. We've got MJF taking on Darby Allin. This was a really tough one to call going in because, you know, you had Darby on the last pay-per-view losing to CM Punk. You want to protect Darby. He's one of the best homegrown talents they have. But then MJF, you know, who was undefeated for so long, you wonder what they're going to be doing with him. And Justin, the response from the crowd in this match was very interesting. Tell the listeners what it was like sitting there in the Target Center during this one.
If it was not 50-50, it might have leaned towards MJF getting the biggest response. The crowd freaking loved MJF and everything he did.
Yeah, he was incredibly popular. I mean, he was going after him like he normally does, but he's getting to that level where people recognize he's such a good heel that they feel like it's cool to cheer for him, I think.
Yeah, that's something Cornette has brought up on his pod, I know, that the baby faces that are working with MJF need to be careful that they don't get eaten alive, because that will, like, when fans are seeing the heel as kind of the cooler character, that will lead to it. And look, it goes back to Roddy Piper, MJF's idol. You know, eventually all great heels do turn babyface, but I don't think that's in the cards right now for him to turn babyface. It was a surprising reaction, quite frankly.
Yeah. So I wasn't sure how much that came across on TV, but yeah, he had a lot of cheers. There were some people, you know, based on the colors he was wearing, they were chanting Rick Martel at him a little bit, but,
but he did have Rick Martel-ish tights.
Yeah. Yeah.
The purple.
That probably didn't come across on TV, but yeah, I mean, there was the dueling chants back and forth. It was like, let's go Darby, MJF, back and forth. And at times, like Justin said, it sounded like the MJF was actually louder. But yeah, I mean, MJF gets the victory. And so I got to wonder if he would be the next pay-per-view challenger for Hangman. You know, we're going to talk about Hangman's victory here in a little bit. And you look at what happened in the match with between Daniel or Bryan Danielson, still getting used to that, Bryan Danielson and Miro. So we know Bryan Danielson is the number one contender now. And when you look at the, so we're going to have a Bryan Page match, but potentially MJF and Page too. Doesn't it feel like they would do Bryan earlier, like maybe on television, and MJF would be a pay-per-view challenger? And what do you think about this, Kyle?
I think MJF is far down the road. I do not expect him to be the challenger at the next pay-per-view cycle.
Even
I don't know who it's going to be. No, I mean, it could be, I guess, but...
could be 4 months out, I guess.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this is the longest gap they have between pay-per-views now and Revolution, which is what... Have they announced the official date for it? I know they haven't announced where it's going to take place at, but usually it's late February. The Danielson match will probably take place at that Battle for the Belts show, Battle of the Belts, in early January, I'm imagining.
Yeah, Justin and I were talking about this on the car ride home and looking at, you know, the upcoming dates and when they could do it, because they got a lot of options with Danielson and Paige. You've got December 8th, Long Island. You know, that's the big show that's outselling WWE in the same building right around the same time. And last year they did the Winter is Coming special. That was December 2nd last year. This one's December 8th. So they could bring that back to build up like a big title match. They're in the Greensboro Coliseum on December 22nd. And you got the Christmas time tie in there in a big building with a lot of history. If they really want to run it fast, they're in Chicago in 2 weeks, November 24th.
I don't think that's going to happen.
You've got the TBS debut of Dynamite on January 5th. And then, as Kyle said, the Battle of the Belts on January 8th. But, like, even that's almost 2 months away. Like, can they drag it out that far with Bryan having just won the number one contendership? I don't know when they do. I mean, there's a lot of options. They can't possibly drag out Bryan to Revolution. I feel like it has to be a TV match.
Yeah, especially since he's already earned the shot. I think it's got to happen in 2021. Like you said, there's just no way to drag this out.
I mean, if they've got the big quarterly special, though, I don't know. I think that's when they're going to do it. The Danielson match is that January 8th show.
And that's,
if I was a betting man.
Yeah, It feels like that could be the case too. But then I also look at it as also, though, you know, 3 days earlier, it's the debut of Dynamite on TBS. They're switching channels. Like, do you want to present a big match? Is it more important to present a big match on the Wednesday Dynamite on the new network, you know, to get people to tune in? You could go either way on that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, MJF is obviously going to be in the mix. He's beaten all three of the other pillars now.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about it later, but I have an idea who he might be feuding with, and it won't be Paige.
Okay.
But I did. It's funny the finish. Just to get back to it, he spent an inordinate amount of time, and I don't know if you guys could tell us something, fixing his junk during the match. Like, and I thought he was just being a good heel and being like, "Hey, look at my junk" and stuff like that. But it turned out the ring was in there. And you know, that's like, and you know, after all that time of bragging about winning with the side headlock, he won with the side headlock.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about what MJF does in the interim. Darby's probably going to want revenge, right? I don't think he takes that loss. I don't think he's just like, "Well, I lost, you know, F me." He's, you know, I could see Darby and Sting getting a tag win over Wardlow and Spears or something. But yeah. Darby's going to probably want to go for MJF.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, MJF, even if he does challenge at Revolution, we got all many, many months. So he's going to have a couple of feuds before then.
Yeah. Well, also, this is something I really want to ask you guys in the building because for being there. They announced the time limit at one point or how much time had elapsed.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did that, I was like, oh, are they going 30? Because I think you wouldn't know this, but JR said this is a 30-minute time limit, folks. And the only other time I remember they announced a time limit in AEW was the Danielson Omega match that went the time limit. So
yeah.
Was there chatter in the building? Did you guys think it was going to go the time limit maybe? And did they announce the time for any other match the rest of the show? Okay.
They did. And I think it might just be something you miss a lot of the times. I think they do announce time limits and you know, a decent amount, enough that it makes sense that they would do it here. I did not think they would. That's not how you start a pay-per-view, and especially since they just did that with Omega and Danielson fairly recently. I was not with them doing the draw. I think it was just to build a little bit more tension to the finish.
Yeah, it did cross my mind, I will say, on that one, because it was the first match. It kind of came because we had such a hard time, and you guys talked about it on the prediction show a little bit, but this was kind of a tough one to call.
Yes.
And so I thought when I heard the announcement, because it was the first match and I hadn't seen that happen the rest of the show yet, it did cross my mind maybe they could do that. But no, it was a really solid opening match. Justin, I think you said this was your favorite match of the show that night.
Hindsight, probably my second favorite. But I did love it because it was all about, you know, one upping each other, you know, trading holds back and forth, the same thing. That small cradle rolling around the ring spot was that really popped the crowd, and the finish protected Darby. And also, like as Kyle already pointed out, MJF, you know, said he was going to win with that side headlock, and he did.
Yep.
This match was worked more smartly than 95% of WWE matches. If you go back and listen to the Crown Jewel review that Liam and I did, we bemoaned how they do all this stuff in the match. This is in WWE, but like 5 minutes later, it doesn't mean anything. In this particular match, it felt like everything they did had meaning moving forward, right? MJF continued to sell the knee. Every spot built. And that was my reaction immediately. I'm like, God, this is a much more smartly worked match than you see in Titan Sports.
Yeah. For sure.
And very different from every other match on the card.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with Justin, though. This was definitely in the top two matches of the night.
Yeah. Aaron's saying the Darby spots in person are even more crazy to see when you're there in the building. Absolutely. Like, especially when you did that coffin drop to the outside. It was insane to watch live. Yeah. This guy, I don't know. He stays healthy. I don't know how, man. Knock on wood, he stays healthy moving forward. Because, yeah, those spots this guy does are insane. They follow that up with the tag team match. All right, and we have a couple of things to talk about here. So, Lucha Brothers taking on FTR. This match is for the AEW World Tag Team titles. Lucha Brothers defending. And first of all, maybe we should talk about what happened. Was it the night before? It was the night before. Yeah. So we had gone to have some drinks at this hotel across the street the night before, Aaron and Justin and myself. And we're down on the main level. There's only one bathroom. There's a long line for the bathroom. And so we go over to get in line. And one of the workers was like, no, come with me. There's another bathroom upstairs. She puts us in the elevator. We go up a couple of floors.
I like where this is going.
Yeah. And we come out of the elevator. There's like nobody up there, but there's like another restaurant room or something, like a bar or something. And as we're walking towards the bathroom, coming from around the corner, it's Mr. Cash Wheeler himself of FTR and I guess his girlfriend. And so he passed us and I was like, oh, hey, how's it going, man? And he's like, hello. That's about it. But we just randomly ran into Cash Wheeler, and he wasn't the only wrestler we ran into randomly around Minneapolis. And we'll talk about the other ones here as we get to them. But yeah, that was, I think that was the first time of the weekend because that was Friday night before Rampage. So yeah, Kyle, maybe didn't go where you were thinking. But,
no, I was like, I was like, oh.
This match was excellent. I felt in the moment at the time, and Justin and I talked about this in the crowd, and Aaron talked about it with us too. It felt like it went 5 minutes too long. Like the peak of the match, they did the Eddie tribute, you know, with the Three Amigos, the frog splash. That crowd went nuts for that. And it felt like at the time that that should have been the finish, knowing that Jericho would win later with the frog splash. Then now in hindsight, it makes sense why that wasn't the finish. But this was the first time it happened on the card, and the crowd popped so huge. And then even after that, when they hit their tag team finisher with the package pile driver and the double stomp,
that
for sure should have been the finish, right? I mean, you could not top that. And then when there was the kick out, I was like, you know, it lost something after that. You know why they did it, because of the whole mask deal and to give FTR an out where the wrong guy, you know, lost or was pinned. But it felt like it went too long. They missed the apex of the match and in the finish. It was a very, very good match. Not as good as the Bucks cage match at All Out, but not many matches are. It was an excellent match. I'd go over 4 stars on it, around 4 stars probably. Probably about 4 stars, actually. 4 to 4 1/4. I'd probably give this 4.
Wow. What would you have given the opener?
I'd give that one probably 4 1/4.
Oh, wow.
I'd be 4 stars on this, maybe 4 1/4 on that. These were, excellent, excellent matches to start. I could be talked into 4.5 on the opener.
Oh,
to be honest. I'd say 4 stars is about right on this. It was awesome. The crowd was into it. I mean, it peaked. They went too long. Went about 5 minutes too long, and they missed the crescendo of the match, it felt like. Justin, your thoughts, anything that stood out to you on this one live?
The finish was just confusing in the moment to me. Mm-hmm. It bothered me a lot more in the moment than it does now, because it does protect FTR. And frankly, I want to see more matches between these two, and that gives them a pretty good reason to continue it. The Eddie almost, it just made me think that they should have put the Minneapolis street fight before this one, so Jericho could have his tribute finish, and then that kick out would have been even more shocking, the fact that it didn't work. But I'm glad they're communicating this kind of stuff, and we didn't get multiple, you know, Eddie tribute finishes.
Yeah. We talked about that on this show, Justin, on the Spotify deal, you and I, how we hope Tony Khan gets everyone together and we're not repeating stuff and we're differentiating our matches. Yeah. I thought this match was almost 2 matches in 1. And I preferred the opening half. And I don't know this, but I would guess it. The opening half of the match was being called by FTR. It was almost like a tag team version of Dean Malenko, Rey Mysterio, their 96 series. And I thought that was the best course of action coming in, what they should have done, where it was, okay, the high-flying babyface, or in this case, babyfaces, are being, you know, grounded. And I really liked Ray and Dean back in the day, and that's how it was worked. I know that there were some pure Lucha fans who did not like the way those matches were worked. I disagreed strongly with that at the time. But I thought it was really good, and then it was all about the Lucha Bros, you know, kind of breaking out, hitting their stuff. The problem was, I think they just hit too much stuff. Like you said, I thought the package pile driver absolutely should have been the finish. The actual finish, while it did protect FTR, I think you just said this, Justin, it didn't really get over in the building. And even watching it live, it just was like, ugh. So I don't know. I wouldn't go 4 stars on this. I mean, it was good, no doubt about it. But I just thought it was 2-1. And the second half was obviously a Lucha Bros style match. I preferred the FTR portion of the program, I think.
So real quick, what would you have given the opener?
Like 4.25, probably.
4.25.
I like to rewatch things before I give them official ratings, but it felt 4.25-ish.
Well, I should say I haven't seen any of these on TV, but just from being there, I 4 stars feels about right to me, but I definitely need to watch it back too. This, I feel like this show I want to watch back even more than All Out for some reason, just to see what it was, how it came across. But I mean, it was a solid match. And then you get to the third bout of the show, which we already kind of talked about the result, Bryan Danielson defeating Miro. And look, this was another awesome one. Another one that was hard to predict going in. This is where Bryan wins the Eliminator tournament, so he has a future shot at the world title. I will tell you, one thing that shocked me was the crowd response, because Miro was cheered more than Bryan. And it wasn't really that close, I didn't think. I mean, he definitely was cheered more. Bryan definitely had
outside of the yes chance.
Yeah. Bryan had his supporters, no doubt about it. But I was shocked, and I know our whole group was kind of shocked by how over Miro was. Like, these promos he's doing on TV, man, and they're so good. We talk about them, week after week, are really, really getting him over with the crowd. We saw that there. I mean, they were hot for Miro. So I was shocked by that, because Bryan's still new in the promotion. I figured he'd get the majority of the cheers. I'd say it was like a 60-40 split maybe or so. But yeah, Miro definitely was the crowd favorite. And did you guys feel like, because Miro lost, by that submission or technical submission, do you think that he was protected in the loss, Kyle?
I mean, they play up the neck deal all the time. Yeah, I think he's fine. I think with Miro, you can heat him up. I mean, it was a spot where he wasn't supposed to lose. Keep in mind, that spot was intended for Jon Moxley. Justin, again, on the Spotify show, we had talked about that. Okay, who was originally going to win this? Does Miro being in this spot instead of Moxley change Tony Khan's decision? I don't think it did. I thought it was just too early for Bryan Danielson to lose at this early juncture of his AEW career. I think Miro will be fine. You can always heat him back up and get him back in that TNT title picture. He'll be good. As far as Danielson goes and getting that reaction, I'll let Justin give his thoughts on this match, but I have ideas what I'd like to see from Bryan Danielson on TV moving forward. But I want to hear what Justin says about the match first.
This match made me realize how much crowd reaction can rattle me and take me out of a match more than any other one on this card. This is the one I need to rewatch, because I was just flabbergasted by the the overwhelming support for Miro on it. But the match itself was really good. I mean, Bryan trying to figure out how to, get a hold of this monster, and the guillotine choke was a nice way to finish it.
Yeah. So
the DDT was a little sloppy, I thought, off the rope. Yeah, but yeah. So what do I think he should do? So it's interesting. Yeah. We're talking about the reaction he had. I would have Danielson come out Wednesday night on Dynamite, confront Paige, say, "Hey, man, congratulations on being the new AEW champion. I'm the number one contender." And then I'd have him throw out this line where he goes, "Hey, proud of you. Congratulations." He's like, "Part of me kind of wishes it was Kenny Omega still champion. I wanted to wrestle him." See how the crowd reacts to that line.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
And based on the I mean, look, different cities react different ways, but maybe Danielson's a little heelish in the buildup for this. Against
He's been
Paige.
A little heelish. Did you guys see the comments in the scrum afterwards? He, in the post-show scrum, where he talked about how he's not here to help the young talent. He's here to be world champion.
There you go. So, I mean, I think he doesn't have to go all the way heel, Maybe he does, but I would have him throw that line out and see how the crowd responds to it. We know he's wrestling Evil Uno on that show, and one would surmise he's probably going to wrestle multiple people in the Dark Order leading up to his title match, go through them.
I think if you did it this week, you might be leaning in to maybe making him a heel because it is in Virginia, you know, the home of Hangman Page. So I do think you'd get a pretty negative response there compared to maybe other towns.
Yeah. I mean, let's see where that goes.
Yeah.
I mean, Hangman's going to be a babyface champion, right? You don't want him getting a negative reaction. So if you're trying to avoid, you know, potentially him being eclipsed by Bryan Danielson whenever they do have that match, it's an idea.
Yeah. All right. The 6-man tag. So we've got Christian and Jurassic Express victorious over the Super Click. And we've talked about this on the show a lot. And Kyle, you've been very vocal about, you know, Christian becoming a heel. We've seen this slow heel turn maybe coming for him. What we've seen here with this feud is Christian kind of like introducing Jungle Boy to the dark side a little bit. You know, Jungle Boy is reluctant to use the chair to do the concerto there. And then at the end, he tells Christian he wants to do it and he does it. But we're definitely seeing this darker side of Jungle Boy and probably eventually the turn of Christian. Thoughts on this match, gentlemen? I thought in the building, personally, I mean, these guys are super over. Of course, Adam Cole gets the massive pop because of the call and response with the crowd. Jungle Boy, this kid is just a star. I mean, he is definitely in that next generation that's going to be main eventing in AEW for a long time. It's obvious when you're there in the building. People love the entrance music, of course, but they pop for almost everything he does in the ring as well. So this was a good one. The Young Bucks obviously get a huge response from the crowd. We weren't quite sure what the Young Bucks tights were supposed to be a tribute to because they were kind of like pinkish. You know, if they would have been like purple, you would have saw like the Prince tribute maybe, but they weren't really purple. It was like a pinkish color. I don't know. It looked cool.
I was going to say pink and black. You guys had to be thrilled from the Super Click.
Yeah. Yeah, the Bret Hart tribute in Minneapolis. Yes.
I was just happy that the baby faces came out in jeans wearing their street fighting gear.
We noticed that too. We were talking about that in the crowd. Yeah, so
that's how you do it.
It was a fun match. What did you think about it, Kyle? Watching it across on TV?
It went 5 minutes too long. And this was the match where Jim Ross, and this is why I would invite you guys to rewatch, annoyed me. Because I don't know if he's not clued into what the finish is, but he had this one call, which in retrospect was just abysmal because he was like, oh, this has got to be it. And like, he like basically like told the audience, if this isn't the finish, then this sucks. And it wasn't the finish. So I don't know why he would do that unless he wasn't clued in. And not cluing your announcers in to finishes, I think is stupid. If I was the announcer, I would demand to know every finish or like just refuse to work. I don't love the pay-per-view. I mean, you know how meticulous I am with my notes. So I just don't know what was up with him. I mean, he wasn't very good on the show. He seemed grumpy. I don't know if it was because Oklahoma got its ass handed to him by Baylor early in the day. I would think that might have had something to do with it. But he was not good on the show, and he was not good in this match. You know, even though it was a 6-person deal, street fights just shouldn't go as long as this one did. And so, again, you could have shaved 5 minutes off, and it wouldn't have been worse, but the babyfaces going over did surprise me a little bit. I thought there might be some babyface drama leading to that Christian heel turn, but it was quite the opposite, where Jungle Boy was like, no, he followed Christian's lead and he won the match. And hey, we talk about it all the time. Jungle Boy needs big wins. This was a big win for him. And Adam Cole didn't take the fall, so no issues there.
And there's nothing wrong with taking their time with what we assume to be this Christian heel turn. Hopefully they got something good and long in store for them.
Yeah, I mean, I expect that match to take place at Revolution. Again, they have so much time and, you know, there's been nothing overt in that direction. We just assume it because I think it's a logical piece of matchmaking. And I think Christian is someone who can carry Jungle Boy. I shouldn't say carry Jungle Boy, but I think working with Christian will make Jungle Boy a better all-around professional wrestler. I think that's why I'm so adamant that feud will happen. Christian's going to, you know, I think teach him to slow it down and how to work kind of a main event babyface style.
Yeah. Agree. So, yeah, 22 minutes and 35 seconds. It was the second longest match on the show, only behind the main event. So, at this point, we're rolling, though. I mean, it was still a fun match. Yep. We're four matches in. We're 4-for-4. And then we get to Cody and Pac taking on Malakai Black and Andrade. And to me, this was the first one on the show where I was like, all right, this should have just been on Dynamite. You know, like, I know they want to get some of these guys out there on pay-per-view. And it was a 4-hour pay-per-view, but it was packed. There wasn't, you know, much downtime, as we have said throughout. It did feel long at times, though, even with all the great action. And this was one where I was like, yeah, this could have been like a main event on a Dynamite. You could have built this up, tried to pop some viewership and done that. I'm not sure that this is a pay-per-view a pay-per-view match that you really need.
The assumption has got to be that Tony didn't want to go two straight pay-per-views without Cody, mm-hmm. getting Malakai on his first pay-per-view. I assume that's been, and frankly, for me, this was when I went to the restroom. Finally, yep. I got worried after that fourth match.
Look, it seems like, you know, it's kind of a badge of honor to make the pay-per-view in this industry, right? No matter what company or if it's WWE, AEW, you want to be on the pay-per-view. It's kind of a slight if you're not. It's easy for, you know, some yahoo like me who's sitting on his couch to say this. I think it's better when you're the main event of a TV show than you're the fourth match on a pay-per-view. I really do. Especially because you stand out.
Especially with the way Tony treats TV.
Yes.
TV is important.
Again, go back to the countdown special, which they aired during the Biden. This match was not featured, so it just kind of felt a little out of place on the pay-per-view. It's four people who they have big plans for, okay? Four people who always should certainly be in the mix. It was the one match that I think we can say, I don't know where you go from here. The post-match was odd with FTR showing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't know what they're doing here. Sometimes that can be good, but here it just feels like, if you put this on TV and not in the middle of a 4-hour pay-per-view, it gets more time to breathe and you can develop stuff better, I think.
Mm-hmm. So, Kyle, did the Cody boos come across as loudly at home as they did in the Target Center?
Yes. And I think I'm going to start cheering Cody Rhodes now.
Okay.
Just the ironic truth.
Just to spite everybody.
Well, he was getting a lot of Triple H and Cody Helmsley chants, at least from the area of the arena we were in.
That is such a reach. Okay, I'm in fucking tears right now.
Because like we've talked about on the show, like there's not really any comparison. Cody puts over everybody. You know, like he's not out there burying people. I don't really get that comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, if you're going to call him Helmsley just because he's involved in management, you should be doing the same thing for Omega and the Bucks. None of them deserve that comparison. But
should Cody bust out the 1996 Triple H curtsy during his next match?
Yes.
How awesome would that be?
There is no doubt that they are playing into it now.
Yes. For sure.
From the start, the bell rings and he tags himself in, you know, Pac was ready to go. Excuse me, Pac. There was a couple other times in the match. It was very deliberately presented that he was not doing his part in the match, just hanging out outside. And then you look back to a few weeks ago when he does the Tiger Driver. I have no doubt that he purposely wanted people to think he was going to do the pedigree.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be like a slow, deliberate turn. I can't really call him a baby face at this point because they're playing into all of it big time. So we'll see how it plays out. Long-term storytelling, as we say, they do a lot of this. They're doing it with Jungle Boy and Christian. They're doing it here with Cody. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
Don't know what the storyline is for him, to be honest.
It just seems like they're building up to like a full-on turn. Like he keeps hinting at it. He's not there to make the tag here for Pac.
There's two things they can do is one is to treat him like Cena, you know, the baby face who just refuses to turn, even though that's all the crowd wants. Cause there was still a very large portion that cheered for Cody, certainly during spots in that match. The other thing you can do is eventually he basically tells the crowd to go screw themselves, and you know, he gives himself a title shot, you know.
Yeah.
Actually, what a piece of business that would be. I don't know if he's turning. As of right now, if you ask me to bet, I would actually lean that he's not going to turn.
So then why are they treating his character like someone who is turning? Because like with Cena, he wouldn't really overtly act like a heel.
Because I think
Cody is.
Because I think they're trying to flesh it out of the crowd.
Mm-hmm. They're just trying to get a reaction.
Yeah, I think it's as our.
You think that'll make people cheer him?
I'm not writing it, but I just think it's what our friend Wade Keller might refer to as meta level performance.
Yeah. I think the turn's going to happen. We'll see. But it seems like they're slowly building up to that. He doesn't want to do it right away, but like there's little hints along the way. And like definitely they're hinting at it most of this match. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, I stick by that comment. I don't think it was necessarily a pay-per-view match, but I understand why it was, because they wanted to get these guys out there on pay-per-view. And Justin Joint, speaking of wrestlers that the Top Rope Nation crew ran into, tell this one.
Malachi yeah, I Black. I was really disappointed that me and Aaron's good friend Malachi lost the match. somebody was a little bedridden on Saturday, so me and Aaron ventured off on our own.
Yep.
Found a nice pub, had a Bloody Mary and a beer and some fish and chips. But on the way there, we ran into Malachi Black crossing the road from the hotel to go to the Target Center. And just briefly, you know, told him to have a good show and to go fuck him up.
I was missing in action. I was napping in my hotel room when this happened. And when they told me, Justin was like, oh, we were like, Ryan's going to be so pissed that he missed this. And then later on that night, they're like, oh, you know who else you missed? We saw exiting a limo and going to the arena, Charlotte Flair. But they were just trying to screw with me.
Not sure.
But yeah, Malachi Black was another one. Run into on the streets by the Top Rope Nation crew. So, all right. Britt Baker, Ty Conti. Britt Baker just... star response from the crowd, of course. As I mentioned earlier, Jamie Hayter and Rebel were both great on the outside, playing into the crowd. Ty Conti has come a long way as a performer. She got a great pop from the crowd. They loved the intro and you know, playing into her MMA background and everything. It wasn't a super great match, I have to say. Again, Ty's like still learning. I think the ceiling for her is high. But it felt to me in the building had kind of a slow pace to it, but it wasn't bad. It was decent. But this is when I actually went to use the bathroom after the match started. And I got out there very quickly. What I will say about the Target Center, great bathrooms, hardly any lines throughout. Like, you know, you're not waiting down the corridor like some of the other buildings I've been in, and they have enough stalls. So I was, you know, I was up the stairs, ran into the bathroom, came out, didn't miss much of the match at all. So I thought it was decent. I'd like to see Ty Conti get this spot on a pay-per-view card, changing it up a little bit with the challengers and everything and continuing to build her up. Fairly average match, though, I thought. How did this come across on TV, Kyle?
This was the third of three that I wrote down needed to have 3 to 5 minutes shaved off. The other ones being the tag title match and the six-man falls count anywhere. And again, like the tag match, there was a very specific spot, and I'm struggling to recall what it was now because I don't have it written down in front of me. Maybe you guys remember it. There was a specific spot where I'm like, okay, this is the finish. And then it wasn't. And then they went like 5 minutes beyond it, and the finish wasn't as strong as that. It felt like they were kind of losing them during the extra 5 minutes. But again, you know, people have their stopwatches out, obviously, with the women's division and AEW. They probably felt that they needed to give him a lot of time. And look, it's mm-hmm. I mean, it's a big title match. So, yeah, I mean, I think the issue that this match faced, Justin, you said it earlier, was that we all knew Baker was winning.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this was the easiest match to predict probably of the nine on the card.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I would say, too, I was a little surprised that we didn't get Anna Jay out there for this, because they played, you know, they've tag teamed before.
Yeah.
They play into their friendship all the time. And with Britt having two people out there. I thought at some point Anna Jay would come down. Didn't happen.
Yeah, especially given how much, you know, they do stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Sting came out for the Darby match.
Yeah, it shocked me because it's like her best friend, her best friend's biggest match ever. She's out there, it's 3-on-1, and she never appeared. So that was a little shocking to me. But yeah, like I said, I like to see Ty Conti getting this opportunity. Decent match. I agree with Kyle. Could have used 5 minutes less, probably. Justin, any thoughts?
No, I think you guys summed everything up, at least anything I would have said about it.
Yeah.
I do like that Conte tap that she ended up getting cradled.
Yeah.
Yes. Very good point.
Punk and Eddie. This one we were really, Eddie Kingston, we were very much looking forward to see what the crowd dynamic would be because, you know, Eddie Kingston was so good in the build up with that Rampage promo. And then right after that, he had the Players Tribune article drop. So you're getting people on his side for sure. And Punk got a massive reaction when Cult of Personality came on, obviously. It was pretty 50-50, maybe a little bit more cheers for Eddie Kingston. I don't know. Would you concur, Justin?
It depended on the moment. I think there are pretty major pops for both guys, loud chants for both guys, but it all depended on the moment. Maybe a little bit more throughout for Eddie. But it's also hard to know with all the tribute stuff if they were actually cheering for him or Guerrero.
Yeah, it was an interesting one to watch. Very interesting crowd dynamic. This was the match I was looking forward to the most on the show, actually, after the preceding couple of weeks of build, even more so than the main event. And I thought it lived up to it. I thought it was a really good match. A couple of small notes. I like that, and Justin, you mentioned this in the crowd, that Punk has now settled on a ring gear kind of mix of the long tights and the trunks. I thought the MMA shorts was a good mix. That was a good look on him. The match is 11 minutes, which I'm not always a fan, as people know listening to this podcast, of matches going way too long. Sometimes that bothers me. I like to have, you know, a shorter match once in a while. I think it can be just as good. 11 minutes, you know, some people I heard that night talking about in the crowd right behind us, even, that they were surprised it didn't go longer. But, you know, at the same time, like, is Eddie Kingston going to work a 25, 30 minute match? I don't think so. That's not really
his style. Is CM Punk going to work a 25 minute match? The guy's had how many matches in 7 years?
But, like, you know what I'm saying with Kingston? I mean, it's not really ever, you know, that's not really been his forte.
But the thing is, like, it was such a battle and such a fight that I was actually shocked when I saw it was only 11 minutes because it felt longer, not like in a bad way that it was dragging out, but it's like, it seemed like these guys were just going to war.
Yeah, everything felt big in this match.
Yeah, to my point earlier about the Falls Count Anywhere match, fights shouldn't last long. Mm-hmm. A real fight doesn't last long.
Yep.
You know, like Rocky IV, that doesn't happen with him and Ivan Drago, where you go 15 rounds just trading bombs. So I thought this was the perfect length. The crowd, you know, this is just me watching on television. It felt like you guys definitely picked back up for this one after kind of falling into a mid-show doldrum somewhat. I thought this was going to be right in the middle of the show. Like, this would be the middle match. And you'd, you know, whatever they chose to open would open. You know what was going on last. This would go right in the middle, and those would be your anchors. But, you know, again, going on 7th in a 9-match show, people looking forward to it. 11 minutes was fine. This was tied with the opener for my best match of the night. Absolutely loved it. I think moving forward for Punk, it's interesting. What do they do? I see a feud with him and MJF. He's the guy who I was referencing earlier. What do you do with MJF moving forward? That's something I would love to see in terms of, you know, the mic battle, right? You've kind of, what Kingston's gotten that hard edge back with Punk now. We've seen it, right? You were joking about CM Dad a few weeks ago, Justin. So the harder edge that we all wanted from Punk is back. And I wrote on Facebook that when AEW does its biggest match of 2022, which will be Adam Page against CM Punk, CM Punk probably turning heel, you can draw a line back probably to this match as the start of Punk's character change.
And let me tell you, when he acted like he was going to do the five knuckle shuffle.
Yeah,
that crowd, they went nuts.
So good.
I am ashamed to admit that I was screaming, "Do it, do it!"
Oh, yeah, yes, I absolutely was, wanted to see him do it. Yeah,
it was so good. Yeah,
yeah, that nice grin on his face. Yeah.
That was excellent. Great stuff there. But yeah, I agree with you, Kyle. I saw you make that point in the Facebook mm-hmm. group, which, by the way, join, link in the podcast description if you're not in it. Pro wrestling discussion group. I agree. We'll see that shift eventually. And right now, you know, Punk is still soaking in the cheers, and he's smiling CM Punk most of the time and everything. But we're gonna see
he's
that.
He's got a little of that edge though. He's got a little of that edge with this.
And, you know, they also brought in the fact, you know, in this feud, like, Eddie Kingston is the hungry guy coming after him, and Punk's no longer like that hungry young guy anymore. You know, like, yeah, he's a success across, he didn't win a lot, but he's a name in MMA. People know now he's done broadcasting in MMA. He's been in movies now. Like, he's a millionaire. So he's not like the up and coming guy that he was 10 years ago. So, like, so now there's a different dynamic to his character that he can play into eventually. And yeah, I think we'll see that over the next few months.
And Kingston brought up that not all the boys in the back like him.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I think Punk, and when you look at like the big names coming out of this pay-per-view, you write down, all right, who's positioned to be at the top of the card moving forward? Obviously, Hangman Page is your world champion. You've got Bryan Danielson, your number one contender. CM Punk and MJF, though, big wins on pay-per-view. I look at that match and the potential the feud has, I really want to see that.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I think you could get nasty on the mic, which is what I want to see. And, you know, we talk about fans cheering for MJF because he's maybe eaten up the baby face a little bit. I'm not saying necessarily he did that with Darby, but I don't know, maybe that had something to do with the response. He ain't going to eat up CM Punk, MJF on the mic.
No.
Right?
No.
I mean, right. I mean, that I think that those are equals when it comes to promo ability.
Mm-hmm. Agree. So in this semi-main spot, they put the Minneapolis street fight with the Inner Circle taking on America's Top Team. And so, you know, of the two matches I thought could be cut, it was this one and the aforementioned Cody and Pac versus Matt.
Wow.
Yeah, here's the deal with it. I know they're bringing in these MMA names and everything, and it's been a long build for sure. But at the same, like, to me, again, this is like one that you could build up as the main event and build a television show around, versus it being, this is when it felt like, to me, in the building, I was like, all right, just get me to the main event. The show is getting a little long at this point. I, you know, of course you want the Jericho entrance, so I get it. And you got Sammy out there, and, you know, Sammy's awesome. So, but
Dan Lambert draws heat.
He drew a lot of heat from the crowd. We actually ran into him after the show too.
Oh, I got to hear about this.
We didn't talk to him. He just walked past us, but he was talking to fans in front of this hotel that we were walking in front of on the way to the bar. We were on the way to the bar connected to First Avenue. Can't remember what it's called now. But it's like, it's part of First Avenue, but like a sidebar. So we were on the way there, and a lot of the wrestlers were just walking across the street from the Target Center into that hotel where they must have all been staying. And like Mark Henry came past us, and I think I saw Riho, and then Dan Lambert. And Lambert had fans all around him, and they were all like complimenting him about how he's done a great job and stuff, even though he's been such a huge heel. And Lambert, of course, he sounds a lot different when he's not out there screaming at the mm-hmm. top of his lungs. And he was just very like, oh, thank you so much. And they're like, well, we hope to see more of you. And he's like, I hope so too. And he was just like very subdued and very nice to all the fans. Way different from what you see on TV.
It's funny. Liam messaged me earlier today. He was rewatching the Jungle Boy MJF match from Double or Nothing last year. Do you know who was in the front row for that match?
Lambert?
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice. He was among those in the crowd. All right.
Aaron checking in the chat real quick. The Depot. That was the name of the bar. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I said this on the Spotify show. I'm going to reiterate right now. This feud is way more over, meaning Inner Circle versus America Top Team, than Twitter.com wants to admit. To me, in the building, this came across as people were into it. And
it
I think
very, it is very, it's for sure very over. I've said that every week after week, that the crowd is, they're huge heels. It's very well built. I just, I just saw it as like a match you could headline a TV show with.
I think it's the only match that could have followed Punk and Kingston when you're doing the card. Any other match on this show you put after Punk and Kingston would die a horrible death. This was literally the only match I think you could have put up. Or I guess the Falls Count Anywhere. But if it's late in the show and then you're going that long, maybe not. To me, this, when you're talking about card construction, I figured they were going to put this after Punk and Kingston. I thought they might have gone a few spots earlier in the card, but then, God, I mean, whatever got put in between those two in the main event might have not had the heat you wanted. But I thought this was fine. I get that, okay, you had this and the Falls Count Anywhere on the same card, but people consistently, week to week, in the buildings were responding to this feud. The only thing I would have liked to see done different, one is Andrei Arlovsky to maybe know what he was doing, but two was I would have liked to see Jericho pin Lambert with the old arrogant cover from WCW.
Oh, yeah. Come on, baby.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been great. I had no problem with this. There were people every week on Twitter who complained about this feud, and there were people. I have no problem with this.
I am not a complainer about this.
Oh, one. I'm not saying
just to be crystal clear. I'm just saying, like, I thought it would have been fine as the main event of a television show because the way they've built it. But you know, it was fine for what it was. Maybe a little bit long. Had some cool spots, like the Sammy spot with the ladder. Obviously, was awesome.
Guevara was awesome in this match.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Him and Paige were the MVPs.
Yeah. It was weird that it was a street fight and they started with everyone tagging. That was kind of confusing. But
you know what? I think they did it to differentiate from the Falls Count Anywhere, even if it kind of made no sense.
Because
I was like, okay, this was on Ethan Page, Justin, a very good call. We need to compliment this guy a little more. There's a skill to being the guy who can take Baron Von Raschke's claw and have that be something that the people definitely get over or definitely into. He's a guy that can do that. I think Ethan Page has been on a real roll. I thought the match against Sammy was really good a few weeks ago on TV. Ethan Page.
Yeah, Page is awesome. He's great. Aaron mentioned in the chat that it was a tough match to watch in person because there's so much going on. He didn't know where to look. 100% agree. This is why it's one I need to watch on TV.
Yeah.
Again, but it was fine for what it was. I'm just saying that like a lot of the criticism on these AEW pay-per-views has been that they're a little long. I don't necessarily think so because they only have a show every quarter. So I do think, you know, you try to pack a lot on there because they're giving you your money's worth. You're paying $50. You definitely get your money's worth. And you're only getting a show every 3 months or so. Mm-hmm. But for the people who want shorter, tighter shows, if I had to cut, for sure it would have been the tag I mentioned earlier first. That was the biggest one, the Cody tag. After that, if I was looking to cut a second match and have it main event a TV show, it probably would have been this one. That was my point.
See, yeah, I think you could have gotten away with cutting that tag if you're going to cut a match. But Frank and I were talking in this group. I think the issue wasn't having 9 matches. I think it's that several of the matches went too long. And I actually don't think this match went too long at all. This match, I don't think I'll overstate its welcome at all. This Inner Circle American Top Team deal. I think compared to the tag title match, the women's title match, and the Falls Count Anywhere, this was appropriately timed.
Although you could argue cutting out the beginning portion when they treated it like a tag team match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although the pop was big when the kerfuffle finally started.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It also was a way to kind of introduce everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it didn't necessarily lead to anything in the second half.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's get to the main event.
Did you guys bring up Baron Von Raftke?
Oh, that was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, I said it with Ethan Page. Yeah, when you stepped away, I said, yeah.
Gotcha. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, when Page took the claw. When you had referenced him, I said that Page was the perfect guy to take
The Baron is at the Tragos Thez Hall of Fame here in Iowa every single year. Great guy, super nice. doesn't age much. I mean, he doesn't look all that much different from his wrestling days, to be honest with you. And yeah, he got a huge, I mean, this is a legend in the upper Midwest, and he got a,
an AWA mainstay, obviously. Yeah, I was surprised Greg Gagne wasn't walking around taking credit for everything, by the way. Did you guys run into him?
No, we did not.
Do you know who I am?
I'm Greg Gagne. You don't know?
Yeah. He didn't hang out to the building and say, you know, I came up with the Elite.
All right. Speaking of the Elite, Adam Page, Kenny Omega, 2 years of build. I mean, I think everybody expected Page to win, which he did. Awesome. Awesome.
WWE
awesome
brain
match.
People didn't.
But, yeah, I mean, I know.
Did you see that online? Like, yeah. Every person, like, whether it was in a Facebook group or on Twitter, everyone who predicted Omega tended to be someone who, I don't want to call him like a WWE fan, but like, definitely enjoys WWE more than I do, or we do collectively. I mean, Bully Ray, this guy stinks.
How about that? The money is in the chase guy. He's been chasing for 2 years. This has been a 2 year build.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you know, he challenged for the world title at the start of AEW. I thought they tied this together so well. Anybody who thinks that this company does not long-term book is fooling themselves. I mean, all the details along the way with Adam Page's journey, you know, the Bucks that wouldn't go out with him for that title match at the start of AEW, the tag team with Kenny Omega, the hints at the split forever, eventually the split, Adam Page losing his confidence, getting built back up, the Dark Order helping him along the way, wins the world title on this night, the Dark Order come out and celebrate with him. Just awesome. Awesome storytelling. And I loved the bit. You know, sorry, I know our friend David Bixenspan out there, who we give a lot of credit on the pod, he didn't like the acting from the Young Bucks in this. I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
Ooh, okay.
I did. I mean, I'm watching it. Maybe I need to watch the TV broadcast. I don't know how you don't love that. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, to have them come out and you wonder, are they going to stop him as he's getting ready for the lariat? And they let him do it. And, you know, he looks down at him and they give him the approval and he takes out Kenny Omega. I mean, this could lead to Kenny splitting off from the Bucks, turning babyface maybe eventually. I hope Kenny takes some time off and heals up, first of all. I mean, he deserves a little bit of a break. But I thought that tied the whole story together perfectly, because the Bucks were involved at the very start of this company when Paige got that first world title victory. And they didn't give him that approval, you know, when he was going out there for the match. And here they come out and non-verbally, they gave him the approval and he takes out Kenny Omega and wins. It's like a 2 year story coming together in the end. I thought it was great.
I think the only criticism is like the Matt Jackson face. Sometimes.
So I couldn't see that maybe. Yeah, you like know,
he,
in the
he has that. It's like it comes off as kind of community theater. And I guess if.
Well, most pro wrestling does. Let's
yeah. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. That's very pro.
I mean, come on, man. Yeah, I mean, I can't nitpick just, this
I
just too
feel,
much.
I feel like it's the kind of thing that what people say is, well, if WWE did that, you would be all over them. Is I think what people would say. I didn't think it added an interesting layer. I think it depends where they go with it. Like the Bucks doing that, like where does that lead? I think we all think, you know, again, talk big picture moving forward, there's going to be some sort of split within the Elite, probably by the end of the next pay-per-view cycle, right? You're having a lot of people come into this promotion, potentially. Yep. Not a lot, but multiple new people come that could mess with that dynamic. So it'll be interesting to see. It was a choice. I think to do that, it wasn't something I was expecting with the Bucks. The other thing that was interesting, and Justin, you were very adamant about this on the Spotify show, and it did not happen. Boom. There was no One Winged Angel kick out from Paige.
Yeah.
Now, Omega kicked out of the move. What do you think? I think people were waiting for it to happen, but him still having a protected finish isn't the worst thing in the world, I think, when I thought about it afterwards.
I'm kind of there with you. I was disappointed, definitely, that night. I was really hoping for it. You know, around that moment was the, normally at one time during every wrestling show that me and Ryan go to, I get so excited that I grab Ryan and I start shaking him. And that was about the moment I started doing that. that night. But yeah, part of me was like, what are you saving it for if not this? But just this story and Paige winning the title is enough to make this a great moment. And you can save that kick out for something down the road, for someone maybe who we were not even seeing coming yet.
Or just a return match.
Apparently, or a return match. Yeah, absolutely. There was apparently a Coda sign in the front row that they made sure to show on camera. And Kenny just really at quick, it for a wanted long to point time. Out, 'cause I don't know if they, I don't know if you actually got this on TV, but just Devil being in the details and maybe a tiny shout out to Moxley. When the Dark Order came out to celebrate with Paige, they brought him a beer, which he promptly grabbed and threw it outside the ring. Didn't want it. It's a new Hangman Paige.
Yep.
I do have one complaint about the match.
I
loved it. I mean, it's probably right up there with Darby and MJF. The problem is that I don't know. I think Hangman needs to put some conditioner in his hair or something. He gets that. He's got that frizzy, dry look at the end of these long battles. And, you know, it's just kind of takes me out of it. Need some sweat. He needs to Bret Hart that stuff.
4 out of 10 on the sweat scale. The Justin Joint sweat scale. I need to like make an image to put up on the video stream of your ratings on the sweaters. Yes.
Yeah. It's funny. We all did expect Paige to take the title, but there was an appropriate amount of drama, I think, in the result, right? The ref bump was a value add. So, yeah, this was very good. This was, I think, my third favorite match of the night. They had done such a good job building to it that they actually didn't really need to go above and beyond and, you know, hit like a million moves at the end and do this like insane banger. Because, again, one would think in early 2022, they're going to do a return match, right? That's something you can just do. So, you know, if you're going to do a return match, you want to leave stuff on the table for said return match, right? That's the lesson of Gargano and Ciampa, who did everything but the kitchen, well, and the kitchen sink the first time around, and then they played to the law of diminishing returns. So here, yeah, they can do, you know, more stuff in a return match. They can kick out of the one-winged angel if need be.
How awesome was that intro? Paige, by the way, with the streets of Minneapolis. I mean, just fantastic. When you watch that, you're like, yeah, there's no way this guy's losing. But the way the drone or whatever swooped down under the skywalk, and then that little bit where the Dark Order was running across the skywalk, that was cool. Paige on the streets of Minneapolis on his horse walking up to the venue. Super cool intro. Definitely a big fight feel. You mentioned the Kota Ibushi sign, Justin. Yeah, it was during the Omega entrance, I believe, and he like stopped at the quarter and he stared at it for what felt like an eternity. You know, so hopefully we'll see something with that down the line. But yeah, great show. Would love, I need to take it in on TV, but being there, like any AEW show I've gone to, you leave the arena on a high. Just a totally different feeling leaving these shows than a WWE show in modern times. I won't say ever because, you know, 20 years ago, leaving a WWF show maybe had that same feeling. But if you compare this going to a WWE live event right now, I mean, there is no comparison. It is a whole different buzz in the arena. And you feel that leaving these pay-per-views. And so I feel fortunate living in the Midwest that we've had so many of these pay-per-views close to us and not had to travel very far to see them. So, I mean, we're lucky in that regard. Can't wait for the next time. And really, really curious where Revolution will be. I'm sure that one would be one we would have to fly to. And, you know, other places in the country deserve to get one of these shows close for sure. So, well, but we'll see where it is. Yeah.
Well, yeah, if Double or Nothing, they've already announced is Vegas. Sorry, I had a brain fart there. Double or Nothing's already in Vegas and All Out seems to be a Chicago tradition for Labor Day weekend, right?
Mm-hmm.
You would think they're going to do like the East Coast then for Revolution. I'd run MSG and say, fuck it.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure because, like, do you consider Vegas West Coast? Because they haven't ran on the actual coast yet at all.
I don't know.
I could see them doing East Coast. they've had a pay-per-view in Baltimore, though.
Yeah. If you live in Ohio, look, anything west of the Mississippi is the West, man. Okay.
real quick, for the record, I wasn't laughing at you just a second ago, Kyle. I was laughing at Tim's comment in the comments here.
Yeah, I see that right there.
Tim always with the takes on WWE. Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was in California, to be honest, but I also wouldn't be surprised if it was on the East Coast. But
it's got to be on the coasts. They're not going to run another one in the Midwest if they're going to do all out in Chicago. Everywhere.
I've heard Wells Fargo and Des Moines is really nice. They should look into that one.
Yes, it is a nice building, but not quite yet, probably. They've ran a lot of shows in Texas, so probably not there.
They should run Cowboys Stadium.
just do it. What the hell? Just do it. But yeah, that'll be Tony said it's been decided in the scrum, but he wouldn't let people know where. So we shall see. But yeah, I think that's all we had for tonight. Just wanted to talk about the experience going to the show. It was a lot of fun. And Justin, thanks for going. Aaron was great to travel with as well. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we can do it again. I know the crew, the Top Rope Nation crew, has talked about maybe doing Double or Nothing, recording at the Blue Wire Studio at the Wynn in May. Hopefully we can make that happen. But we are thinking about that. Revolution? I don't know. We'll see where it is. But, yeah.
By the way, where's our... they need to do a new stage guy that's normally in the comments.
One guy that jumped on our show and... comment after comment. What about the pay-per-view stages? They had a specialized pay-per-view stage here. The tunnels were different. They had all the gears up
maybe
there.
That's why. Cool. Maybe he got what he wanted.
He's happy. Yeah.
Apparently he floods the Matt Men podcast mentions too.
Yep, he does.
Didn't we talk to Andrew Zarian about this?
Yep.
Whoever that guy
Change.
Was.
Change has come to All Elite Wrestling. Pay-per-view stages, baby. So... Guys, we'll have another show coming later this week. It'll be Top Rope Nation Extra, again, weekly bonus show on Patreon. I'll put up a teaser on the main feed. You can hear that. But we will be recording later this week as well. We'll have a new flagship dropping next week, most likely. And we will talk
Survivor to you real Series.
Soon. Oh, that'll be next week. Survivor Series 96 and then the Survivor Series post show coming up as well.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm very excited to do 96 when we do that. I'm a lot... less bullish on Survivor Series 2021.
Yes. Ugh. When Survivor Series 2021 happens, we will be going live after the fact doing a live post show. So make sure you subscribe on YouTube so you don't miss the live stream. Otherwise, of course, after the fact, available on all of our podcasting streams.
This Sunday night.
Yeah.
The Survivor Series?
Why not just blow all these big matches for no particular reason other than a bad gimmick? Why not?
I guess in the case of one, you're right. And if you want to learn about the history of Survivor Series, please go to Top Rope Nation's Facebook page.
That's true. Kyle has been doing... it's on the Facebook discussion group, Top Rope Nation Pro Wrestling Discussion. Kyle's been doing these awesome breakdowns of every single Survivor Series daily, just like you do with SummerSlam back in August. A must-read friend of the pod, Garrett Gonzalez... Figure Four Weekly Online, Wrestling Observer Radio. He said in the group, it's his favorite thing to read daily on the internet, Kyle. High praise from Garrett.
I was kind of honored by that. I didn't know how to take that. I respond with things sarcastic. It took me aback so much that I was touched, for God's sake. Although we have now reached the real sad portion of the program as we're in the late aughts. And like, I almost combined like 07 and 08 into one post because I was like, who the fuck gives a shit about either of these two shows?
Yeah, we've got some chats checking in on Twitch. Yes, we are streaming on Twitch too. Check out our Twitch channel, trying to get a little growth there. We just started streaming on Twitch, so we don't have many followers over there. But if you use Twitch, why not follow our channel, twitch.tv/Top Rope Nation? That would help us out as well. Leave those reviews, 5-star reviews on Apple, and of course, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Guys, it was a fun time. Episode 229, Top Rope Nation in the books. We'll catch you all again real soon. Take care.
Peace.